Welcome to the Mud Island Adventures podcast. I'm your host, Garrick McMullen, and I'm here to help you find your adventure right here in the UK. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Mud Island Adventures podcast. It's a little bit of a special episode this time because we've decided to introduce some interviews with people that we thought have really gone literally sometimes the extra mile. So here we are, the first of those interviews with Martin Longmuir, who those of you that have been following the page will probably know that has just run 10 marathons, so that's mountain marathons, in 10 days. So an incredible effort. Apologies for some of the sound quality. We were away from home and had a bit of background noise from my little one and his iPad that I didn't realise had happened at the time. So apologies for that, but I hope it doesn't take away too much from the interview. So without further ado, here we are, interview with Martin Longmuir.
I'm really happy to be online today with Martin Longmuir. You may have seen him on Instagram as 2020, turning 40. We're a little bit late. It's now 2021, so you must be 41 now, Martin. Is that right?
Not quite. I've got a couple of months yet to push, so I managed to squeeze it in before the day came across.
Outstanding. But those that have been following your progress on Instagram have probably seen the amazing thing that you've just recently done. Why don't you just tell us a little bit about the challenge?
So the challenge was to run 10 marathons in 10 days over the local hills, which sit about 6 or 7 miles away from my house. So I would cycle out each day and then cycle back. And the aim of it really was to raise funds and awareness for Friends of Anchor in Aberdeen, which is a cancer research charity. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. Not much.
Not much. I must admit, so I think most people that have seen your Instagram posts will have picked up on the 10 mountain marathons in 10 days, which frankly is astounding in itself. But I picked up on it when I checked your Strava the other day, that you actually cycled about 11 or 12 Ks each way to get to the start and home again in the afternoons, which I don't know, you're banging in a few more miles on top with the bike, which brilliant stuff, mate. So hats off to you on that one. So what prompted the decision to undertake such a mammoth challenge, mate?
So I kind of had an idea. It was in 2018. I wanted to do something for turning 40, just something different, like an adventure, and push myself physically. So I'd looked at the Cape Wrath Ultra Marathon, which is up along the west coast of Scotland. So I was like, I looked at it and I looked at the sort of event itself, and it was 8 days to travel this distance of about 400 kilometres. And I thought, oh, that would be a good challenge. I'm quite into the idea of that. Then I seen that it cost £1,600 to enter the run, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm from Aberdeen. I don't like to spend money. So I started thinking, I'm not wanting to pay £1,600, which really is like £200 a day for basically to move my kit from one campsite to another. I thought, I'm not into that. What I'll do instead is I'll plan my own route and I'll raise money instead. So that's kind of where it all started off.
Right. So yeah, I can absolutely see your point with there's a lot of events out there now that are charging huge amounts of money to do not very much for you. But I guess, yeah, some of it goes into the planning. But of course, you've done all the planning yourself for this. So originally it was going to be coast to coast, wasn't it?
Yeah, so my original route was going to start on the Isle of Skye and come across the Coolin Mountains onto Blavin and then over Loch Alsh. I was going to do a little bit of a loch swim and then basically just carrying on heading east from there. So the original distance was actually 390 kilometres to be covered in 10 days. But there was, like I said, there was a little bit, so I broke up with maybe the odd bit of wild swimming or whatever. And then I went, I can't remember, I think I was buying running shoes or something from Cotswolds or something. And one of my chums works there, and she'd said to me, how many Munros do you have left to do? And I was like, 2 on Anchelach. And then she's like, why don't you start your run there? And I was like, all right. cheers for taking that massive spanner and throwing and cleaning the planning works. So I then spent about a month replanning the route to start on check to then pick up my original route, which turned out all right. I did about 10K onto the distance in total, but I thought I could still do that in the time I wanted to do it. So that was kind of the birth of the 2020 Turning 40 Challenge, and that's what I would have ran last August had the world not had different ideas.
Yeah, we all had a bit of a drama with everything going on with COVID last year, but the fact that you sort of didn't use that as an excuse to drop it altogether, awesome stuff. So the charity that you've been raising money for, Friends of Anchor, can you tell us a little more about that and how you link to it?
So they're like a cancer research and support unit in Aberdeen, and what they do is they obviously have got surgeons and everything that deal with patients, but they also do a hell of a lot more than that. So the Anchor unit is the actual part of the hospital, and then Friends of Anchor is the charity that support them. So the charity provides a lot of sort of wellness services like massage for patients, childcare facilities, all sorts of things like that, just to make the journey through your battle against cancer that little bit easier. The really good thing about the charity is that all of its overhead, so staff, merchandise, their website, everything is all paid for by an oil company in Aberdeen. So there's no overhead. So it means whatever money you raise for the charity goes to the charity itself. It doesn't pay somebody's salary or anything like that at all.
That's brilliant. Sounds like a really, really worthy cause. And what's your... I know this, we've already chatted, but do you want to tell everyone what your link to that particular charity is?
Okay, sorry. So yeah, I've been fundraising for them for a fair number of years. My first sort of run-in with Friends of Anchor was actually when I was at school and someone had leukemia, a guy in my class at school had leukemia, and then he would have been not even 18-year-old and lost his fight then. So I was kind of aware of it then and had started doing little bits and pieces then. But then my auntie, years later, I can't think of the year now, to be honest, I think it was 2012, passed away after battling cancer for about 15 years. And she'd been treated by Friends of Anchor, well, supported by Friends of Anchor, constantly during that whole period. And then more recently, my own mum had breast cancer and it came right through the system. And obviously, thankfully, she's actually won the battle and she's still going strong today. So there's a real sort of, a close connection, almost like a personal connection. It's like a personal battle, almost, if you like, to try and raise as much as I can for them.
Fantastic. And how much have you raised so far, man?
The last time I checked, I was sitting at just over £7,600 raised so far.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I was only expecting to raise about £2,000, so it's just gone wild. Over the last sort of 2-3 weeks, the numbers have just been flying up. People are unbelievably generous, especially considering the sort of last year or so we've had.
Yeah, that is fantastic news. And it just sort of goes to show how many people's lives, I think, have been touched by cancer and the support that people have for these charities. So, really well done, mate. Thank you for doing that. So we first met, just for the listeners at home, Martin and I first met back in 2001.
I think 2001 probably, yeah, in Colchester, I would think, in the army.
Yeah. So yeah, Martin and I actually served together in the army back then, and Martin sort of left and went on to do bigger and better things rather than staying in the security blanket that is the military. But yeah, I've got to ask, do you think the military sort of gave you the prep for this or help with the mindset?
Definitely the sort of mindset and the not giving up sort of attitude towards things. I mean, even before I joined up, I was quite a fit person anyway and was a hill runner and that, but I think definitely my attitude towards setting a task, planning a task, and then following through with that's definitely came from that sort of background. I think if I hadn't served, I would never have even probably considered doing something as stupid as this.
Yeah, we do seem to lose that sensible sort of button in her brain sometimes.
Yeah,
It's
definitely. Otherwise, I would have done a small sort of walk or something otherwise.
yeah, talk about doing the little bit extra, mate. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is no mean feat. So you must have done some prep. Can you tell us a bit about how you prepared for the challenge?
Yeah, so once I decided on the route and things like that, I then had to start obviously training for it. So I kind of came, the idea kind of spawned in my head in about January 2018, and I quickly realized that to be fit enough to do it for my 40th, I'd have to probably gear up and start training there and then. So in February 2018, I started working at the gym with my cousin who's a personal trainer. So I went and did like an evening where she just pretty much thrashed me for about 3 hours in the gym, just going through everything from deadlifting to bench press to squatting, pull-ups. It was basically just a fitness test and to check on my technique of lifting and things. And then it was, I think it was more just so she could humiliate me, to be honest with you. But yeah, she run me pretty hard. And then off the back of that, she designed a gym program for me to follow that had gaps between it where we could fit in the start of my running program. And we sort of progressed it from there.
And that we're talking about 3 years of prep
Yeah.
to undertake this challenge. So you know that just for everyone else, if you're thinking of doing something like this, definitely recommend spending that time preparing. Otherwise, I think you know you're setting yourself up to fail sometimes, aren't you?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the emphasis of the gym work was to sort of build a foundation, not just in my legs, but in the rest of my body as well. It was going to be able to support the stresses and the impact of running up and down hills all day, every day. Because, I mean, running on flat ground is bad enough. As soon as you put climbing and descending into that loose ground, gravel, changes in weather and things like that, your body really, it quickly degrades. So the idea in the gym was to sort of build that strong foundation that we could then build, we could then start stacking the running on top of it. It was also so that I was strong enough and fit enough initially to actually keep me going through it and try and be injury free for what was meant to be 2 years, which, I mean, obviously I picked up injuries left, right, and center, but the gym plan was always there to just keep me pushing on and building up on it all the time. It worked.
Happy days, good to hear. So, I mean, this is obviously taking quite a large chunk of your time, and you know, you're married with two
Yeah.
kids, mate. Let's talk a little bit about how you balance that work-life balance.
It's tricky, especially. I mean, it's tricky enough when you work away from home, but when you're at home, it's even trickier. So what I basically did was part of my plan was to train early morning as often as I could, and I'm talking like if I was doing a hill run, I was on the hill at 4 o'clock in the morning running. So that I was back before breakfast so that I could do the day-to-day things with the kids, like getting them out of bed, getting dressed, breakfast, things like that. So most of my training was done really early in the morning. The other good thing about doing it early in the morning was it, especially in the wintertime, it's dark and it's cold, so it's taking away some of your senses and things like that. So it's making you have to work that a little bit harder, and it's building that resilience the whole time as I was building towards the actual run itself.
So it's family's obviously been very supportive. Are they happy you're going to get to take a little break from all the preparation and the actual event?
Yeah, I think Nicola, my wife, has been counting down the days until it was actually done to finish the night the way. I think she was sick of hearing me saying, "When I do the run, when I do the run, when I do the run." And when it got delayed by 12 months, and I was like, "I'll have to do the run in 12 months," I could see her just saying, "I've got another 12 months of putting up with him saying, when I do the run." So yeah, I think the support I've had from family and friends has been absolutely outstanding. to still support me and be positive and push me and push me and push me after having to kind of obsess about something for so long is amazing, really. I'm definitely quite lucky.
Brilliant. Well, hats off to Nicola and the kids then as well. Sounds like they've undertaken their own challenges for this.
I think so. I think they've done probably just as much, if not more, than I have.
So let's talk about the actual, the actual event itself, the challenge itself. Can you talk a little bit about the sort of equipment and kit that you took with you on the challenge, and also, I mean, I imagine fueling was a big part of this. So do you want to talk a little bit about your fueling strategy as well?
So yeah. Originally, I was going to obviously run this from coast to coast, so it was quite complex to plan. But as the year started this year, we didn't really know what was going on in the world. So I made the decision in March, I think it was March, to change it to a local run. And when I changed it to a local run, it made things a little bit easier to manage. So supporting that I was going to... I didn't quite need anymore, so in the end I decided just to run it unsupported, which meant carrying everything I needed each day with me each day. And as I found as I went on in the run, I ended up carrying more and more and more every day. So sort of my basic kit I had two pairs of running shoes to rotate between, so if one pair got soaked I could wear another pair the next day whilst that first pair was drying out. On my body myself, I had obviously a pair of second-person running socks, shorts, and just like a tech t-shirt that would hopefully dry quite quick in the sun if the sun ever came out, which it didn't really do much. A Garmin watch with a heart rate monitor. The heart rate monitor is important because everything I do in the zone two if I can. So that's like zone two and my maximum heart rate. I don't tend to run out of that zone anymore. I try and keep my heart rate there all the time, no matter what I'm doing.
Unfortunately, I'm sort of looking at your figures, Martin. They're slightly better than mine. But your pace at zone two is probably my zone four.
I did a lot of work in zone two. I did over a year's training just in zone two to get me to where I needed to be. So when I first started running at zone two, I was running like 7 minute kilometers, and I was like, what's going on here? I can run so much quicker than this. But I had to kind of stick it out and trust the whole process that Amy had put me onto. And eventually I saw the time coming down and down, and it just started to tumble. And I think before I started increasing the distance and the run-up to the run, I think I was sitting about 4 minutes to 4 minutes 10 a kilometre and not budging it. So you know, that's why the heart rate monitor was so important for me, like the chest strap, so that I could monitor that as accurately as I could.
Great stuff. So that's a really good...
Sorry,
mate, go on.
I was just going to say the rest of the gear I carried was all split between a running vest and a small sort of... So I carried, I think, on average about 3.5 to 4 litres of water a day. And my strategy for that was just basically keep drinking and like just constantly just taking a little bit of water out of a camelback or whatever for the whole day. Just small sips the whole time I was running. And what I did was I kept 2 soft flasks in my bag, so it was like a spare litre in my bag. So if my camelback ran out, one of my running vests ran out, I knew I still had those two to pull out. And then once I pulled them out and started using them, it's at that point that I've started to ration my water a little bit, depending on what I'm
doing.
Other stuff that I took, I had my lunch. Now, I don't carry any sort of fancy gels or anything like that. I just eat normal everyday food. So I was getting like a sandwich, a packet of crisps, some biscuits maybe, and some fruit. And that was basically it, what I carried food-wise. The rest of the stuff in my bag, I would carry 3 or 4 spare pairs of socks. I'd have Compeds for any blisters that were niggling. I'd have a waterproof jacket and some painkillers and things like that. And that was about it, really. That was the kit list for each day.
So, yeah, pretty straightforward stuff. But potentially sort of life-saving, got you through the through what is quite a big challenge.
Yeah, it was. I think the thing I increased was the pairs of socks I was carrying and how much water I was carrying. So like when I started out, first couple of days I was getting away with about 2 liters of water, and by the end of it I was finishing 4 liters of water just as I was maybe getting towards the end of the run. So definitely as I got more tired and fatigued, I was obviously needing that little bit more water. So yeah, but yeah, it kind of seemed to work out quite well.
So Martin, the what's next? Is this it? Is that you done with mountain marathons, or have you got anything else planned?
I've got nothing planned immediately. I've spent a little bit of time just recovering. I've got a little injury to my right foot. I think it's just some ligament damage from a pounding my feet have taken. So I'll probably take another week or so off. As soon as my foot's better to run, I'll start running again. Probably be out on the bike before then. I've actually been out on the bike already. Challenge wise, I've got something else in the pipeline, probably sitting a year or two away. Kind of similar, whoa, but not on as grand a scale as what I've just done. So the next plan, it'll either be next summer or the following summer. More likely the following summer, just to give my body a proper break and get time to prep for it. It'll be to do a 24-hour run on the summer solstice on the hill again. So I'll probably pick like a 5 or a 6 kilometre route between the three summits, and I'll just do laps of that for 24 hours.
Jeez. So, right, you'll have to forgive me, because I think on the podcast I was trying to figure out what the pronunciation
is. Okay. So the hill's called Benahi.
Benahi.
Ben.
There we go.
Benahi.
Benahi.
Yeah, that's it. So you weren't
right.
Far off.
So yeah.
You weren't far off.
Yeah. Well, I mean, having spent quite a lot of time in a Scottish unit, so I still haven't quite picked up all the pronunciations. So yeah, thanks for clearing that one up, mate. So, mate, it's awesome. I've got one more question, and with you being the first interview that we've done, I think I'm going to throw in a curveball question in each interview. So here we go. Have you ever eaten a seagull? Or if you haven't, what do you think it would taste like?
I've eaten a guga, which is a baby gannet, which is pretty much a seagull. It's caught on the West Coast. I used to work up north a lot, and I've got a friend up north. Her dad is one of the people that goes and fishes on. They're from the West Coast originally, like the Western Isles, and he's one of the people that goes every year and fish it. Well, goes and catches these birds. So there's like a whole island. I can't remember what the island's called now. But I think it's Ness Island. I'm pretty sure it's Ness Island. They go up there for a weekend and they catch as many birds as they can and they bring them back. It's an ancient tradition, and then they bring them back. So I was working up in a place called Denver Gordon. This is going back probably nearly 10 years now, and I was speaking to her. I was going out running with her at nights and that, and she said, "Oh, our dad had just came back from Ness, and he'd got some guga. Did I want to try it?" And it is literally. So they make a fire pit in a barrel, and it's just, I think it was wrapped in tin foil and pretty much just thrown in like you would do with a potato on bonfire at night. And then they pulled it off. And it was literally just like eating like really, really salty, fishy chicken. That's what it tasted like. So I can officially say I'll not be trying that ever again.
Well, that's I'm really glad I asked the question now, because I didn't expect you to say it. But that's brilliant. Fishy chicken, over the moon. Well, mate, listen, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy recovery period to speak with us. We'll be following you all the way up to the next challenge. We're really looking forward to seeing what you do next, mate. In the meantime, congratulations on completing the 10 marathons in 10 days, Again, an epic, epic effort. So
Thanks very
thank you
much,
ever
Jeff.
so much for coming on.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. Anytime. So I'll do.
Cheers, mate.
So there we have it, Mud Islanders. I'm sure you'll agree that was an incredible effort by Martin. And wow, what an amazing way to raise some money for charity, and a very worthy one at that. Hope you enjoyed the first of these interviews. I'm planning to do quite a few more in the future. Hit us up on Instagram at Mud Island Adventures, and on the Facebook group and page. Please come check us out. And if you like what you're hearing, or like what we're doing, then please do hit the like button on your podcast platform. Get the word out there. Tell all your friends. And hopefully we can make this bigger and better for you guys at home. In the meantime, all that remains is, well, why don't you go do and then tell us about it. Bye for now.